Hello and welcome to Dyslexia Explored. I have got a very unusual episode here for you today. We've got three guests with us today, and our episode today is all around writing a novel. We've actually got two novelists who have written books that relate to each other, and there's a core dyslexia story both in the novel and behind the novel with Ed, the key author of the story, and also one of the characters in the actual novel. It's going to be a little bit of a mind meld for you, including time travel, vampires, and all sorts of stuff. You're going to really enjoy this, but let me give you a little bit of backstory here. Okay, so our first guest is a man who has been working in the newspaper industry for 43 years. In fact, more. He started with his father doing the paper round in his area because his father was in charge of distributing newspapers to houses and businesses in his area. And so Ed ended up going into the business himself, and it's called a news carrier. You know, they drive along the road and they throw the newspaper out the door and it lands on your driveway. And for those of you in the UK, you know, it's inconceivable in the UK because the newspaper would be wet immediately, obviously. But in America, they can do this, and you've seen it on the movies. So Ed has basically been one of these news carriers for 43 years. And he's also been in the warehouse coordinating it all, coordinating the routes, covering those people who can't make a route on the day. So they're up and operational 7 days a week and for the last 43 years. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Ed is dyslexic, and to keep himself entertained, I think, in the night shift, he's made up a fictional character of himself. And in doing that, he met a lady called Denise, who is here with us as well. And she is an author and an editor, a features writer, in fact, for a newspaper in the Herald News Now, and an author now. But in that time, she was also a courier underneath Ed. And that's where this story that we're talking about today begins, because they started to explore this fictional character, and it ended up in Denise's book, a trilogy of books, and it's also ended up in Ed's book. So today we are talking about fictional characters, dyslexia, etc. And Ed is also joined by Nancy, because Ed is actually a little bit nervous about sharing his story here, because Ed has dyslexia, and it's affected his confidence through the years. And we can all relate to that with some dyslexia here too. So, you know, and I need to introduce Nancy, Ed's wife. Nancy is the illustrator in this book, and she is formerly an art teacher, and she's also a painter now, and paints for people and sells those paintings as an artist. So it's really great to have you on the podcast here, Ed.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I enjoy being here.
I'm glad you're here. This is going to be fascinating to unravel this fascinating, highly dyslexic story. Nancy, it's great to have you here as well. Thanks for being with us.
And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's great to have this husband and wife combination. And I think that's going to be a key part of today's story. So this is going to be a multi-layered episode where we're going to hear about this story, but we're also going to hear about Ed's dyslexia journey, and we're also going to hear about Ed and Nancy's dyslexia journey, as it were, because Nancy's not dyslexic, but often people with dyslexia find complementary partners that can help them with yes. their extremes of abilities and inabilities. So, and we're going to hear a bit more about that. Now, our final guest and to complete this, join all the dots, is Denise. Denise, it's great having you here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
So we've got so much to talk about, and we're going to get to the book. But as usual, in the Dyslexia Explored podcast, we are here to really understand the backstory of a person's life. And we've had a number of authors on the podcast, and it's just really fascinating to hear your backstory, where it all began, and we'll just go through the usual stories we ask. So, Ed, what was life like before you found out you had dyslexia?
Well, it was difficult. You know, I was put upon starting school. I was, of course, put in the slower categories, you know, and often growing up, I was accused of being lazy, accused of because I seemed to understand, the material that the teachers were teaching, but I wasn't doing well on tests, and I wasn't getting work in, and I never doubted that I was lazy. I always thought that I was, and slow. You know, I also thought I was slow. That continued through the lower grades, and then I got when I became a teenager, I actually made it into an elite high school. But I always thought that I had cheated, because the problem for me was clearly reading. You know, by that time, I was aware that I wasn't writing as fast as most people, wasn't reading as fast. And they had the tests they gave were speed reading tests, in essence. You know, you read as much as you could and answered as fast as you could and answered the question, and it was timed, you know, and that was but the problem was I had taken these tests before many years ago, but yeah, I didn't forget the answers, I got into the school, you know, and then promptly struggled, you know.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is you did the test for this school, but the reason why you got all the right answers is because of your memory was so strong. You had remembered it from previous occurrences. You hadn't practiced these. You just remembered those answers. You gave those answers. You got into the high school, but then you started struggling.
Yeah. It's the test showed weaknesses in math, of course, for the same reason. Very good with formulas, terrible with adding and subtracting, you know. But in essence, that's correct, yes.
So what was the wake-up call for you? How did you sort of wake up to the fact that, you know, you had dyslexia? Was it a person?
No, I went on to college. And my junior year of college, professor said, your work is terrible, but your oral participation is pretty spot on. You might have dyslexia. You know, I want you to take a test. You know, and I took the test. You know, and we've got this program here for you. But I was already a junior in college, and even though this professor was saying that, yeah, you know, I'm dyslexic, I don't think I believed it. I thought that, you know, this sounds like a good excuse for just being lazy, you know. And then I promptly had a son, you know, out of wedlock. But I had to start making money, you know, so I dropped out of school. And for many years, that was it. The career I was in would have made dyslexia played a role in my career for sure. You know, in that I was always getting streets and numbers mixed up, but I compensated with a very good memory. And that was the thing, is I always knew that I would seem dull, at first, but confident as a hard worker, and I got used to playing that role. I really did. You know, I got used to being pretty sure that I wasn't going to impress anyone with what I knew or I would never sound competent, but I kind of learned, I think, to play stupid, you know.
So are you, I remember someone saying to me, there's a phrase in Scotland, which is let the ball do the talking. So it's a football phrase, a soccer phrase, where, you know, someone might, you know, sort of show off, oh, I can do this, I can do that, I'm the best or whatever. And then the coach says, let the ball do the talking. So basically, you did the let the ball do the talking approach, where you might not sound so smart or whatever, but when you actually got to doing the job and delivering results, you started to deliver some results. Literally delivered result, delivered the newspaper.
Thank you. I think that's it's a better way than I could have put it. Certainly, yes, yes.
So, basically, let's catch up. You know, when you were young, you didn't know you had dyslexia, and you just thought it was laziness.
Yes.
And then when you got identified by the college, you thought it was just a convenient excuse, and you still thought it was laziness.
I did.
And in fact, and you dropped out of college and went to earn a living to look after your children. Uh-huh. Do you still think it's laziness?
No. I've had so many people since then, so many carriers that I was training, for example, saying, you know, you sound like you're really dyslexic. You know, every time you say right, you mean left. And, you're telling me all the numbers wrong. And, you know, I know you know the route, but have you ever been tested for dyslexia? Yeah. You know, and I've started hearing that and still not believing it really, you know, until my mid 40s, I started to, in between then, I went back to school to learn how to program computers, you know, and there it was pretty hard to deny. In fact, that's how me and my wife met. We were taking an undergrad class and in computing, and I had a roommate at the time that was also in the industry, and him and her kind of had my roommate and my wife and some other people kind of had a contest about who was going to get the higher grade. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was not in that contest because my grade was always the lowest. But when it came to actually writing programs.
Oh, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, I excelled. And
so the ball did the talking again.
I'm sorry?
So the ball did the talking again, the actual programs
again,
you produced.
The talking, yeah.
You got the results. Yeah.
But it didn't pass the course, you know. It didn't pass the course for me, you know.
Fascinating. You know,
there's two separate things in a ways. There's passing a test and there's doing what and there's learning, I think. You know, and they're not always the same thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what would you say, I always ask people, what would you say is the main challenge, you know, you found with dyslexia? Because I'm so surprised that everyone answers this question so differently, even though they might have some of the same traits or difficulties. Mm-hmm. The challenge it presents to you and each person is different. So Ed, what would you say is the main challenge you faced once you discovered you were dyslexic and in the intervening periods? What do you think is your main challenge?
A loss of confidence. I think that's my number one personal detriment, you know, deficit. Mm-hmm. You know, for one, I stayed in newspapers, which doesn't pay well, you know. Largely because I was afraid of going and looking for a job. I couldn't really fill out an application. I did not interview well, you know. I have a difficulty, I think, socializing. You know, I'm I'm always afraid. I mix up opposites all the time. I'm always afraid of offending somebody and not realizing that I said something deflammatory just because I missed a knot or I put a knot in where I, a knot or no when I meant the opposite. Most people, I don't think notice it, but I do.
Nancy, you know, can you kind of chime in here? I think a lot of the listeners would really relate to this. You know, like Ed, if you don't mind me asking, you know, you've just retired.
Yes.
You're in, I'm guessing, what, 50s, 60s?
63.
63. Okay.
Yes.
So, you know, so you're basically saying that dyslexia still affects you at 63 in terms of mm-hmm. confidence.
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
She would agree. Yeah.
Nancy, what's your take as a partner over the years? You know, how have you observed the effects?
It's interesting. One, what he said about being confident, that is the most powerful thing that is anti himself, is his confidence. When he meets people, he's afraid of their opinion of him because of sometimes of what he says. And I have to admit, how I was when I met him was because of his golden heart. He loves people. When he says he doesn't like to talk to people, he loves people. If he sees someone who is having a challenge or something, he's right there for them. He's there because of the fact, I think, and I know, because of some of the problems he's had. When I first met him, he would play the incompetent person to his friends. And that surprised me, because I did not see that part of him until I saw him with his friends. And I didn't like the friends of some of the things they said about him. And when we started dating, all of a sudden his friends started seeing this man in a slightly different way and saying,
drastically different yeah. way.
Wait a minute.
Drastically different way. Yeah.
You know, Ed's yeah. not playing this incompetent person anymore. And he's very confident. His memory is phenomenal. And I have to say, one of the weaknesses I have is I'm not a good writer, and I'm not, I paint. And I also do not understand poetry. He can quote poetry. He can discuss poetry. He can explain poetry. And I'll look at him and I'll be cross-eyed going, okay, if that's what you think it means, but I have no comprehension of poetry. And he is phenomenal with his memory because of the fact, visually, he cannot a lot of times get the point, but if he hears it, he knows it. He's more of a auditory learner than a visual learner.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. So let's move to, you know, the novel. And the whole, you know, you've written a novel, and
yes.
you basically, instead of going down, well, let me just recap. You've done a computer design training, computer programming training, and
yes.
you're actually pretty good at it, as demonstrated amongst your friends, although you couldn't pass the tests as well as them, but you could
yes.
actually produce great results. But you chose not to go into programming, basically because of your lack of confidence, mm-hmm. and you stayed inside of the world of delivering newspapers.
Yes, I did for a time write programs for the industry, which I tried to sell, you know, and where I'm a fairly good programmer.
Fairly.
I'm not a salesman.
Oh, no.
So.
No.
And my wife could talk more about that, I'm sure.
He cannot sell himself to someone, because if he has something slight that's a little off on the program, the whole program is wrong because he wrote it. His confidence mm-hmm. is not
yeah.
there. He will see everything wrong with it, but never see what's right with it. And that was one of the problems when he was programming. He had a phenomenal program and he was selling it. And then his confidence got in the way and he started giving it away at times.
I am very good at not making money. If you want any advice on not making money, doing something and not making money at it, I'll be glad to help you. I cannot promote myself. No.
Okay. So the novel, you're working night shifts every night for 43 years, nearly 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And that's when you met Denise.
While
she worked. So Denise, why don't you tell your story and then we'll start talking about the novel that Ed ended up writing.
So very briefly, I had been a single parent, six kids, and I had met my second husband delivering papers. And it was actually my kids we had homeschooled who trained me to do the route. We did that for a lot of years as a family business, thousands of papers. And the company that owned the main paper we delivered moved its distribution to another company. And all of a sudden our routes were broken up with different supervisors. And Ed was one of my supervisors. And everything that he's saying about himself, I've only gradually learned about him through the writing of the novel. And he can explain, because it's really his story, some of the things that he did in the middle of the night to make delivering newspapers fun. But my editor, and I was a freelance at the time, I freelanced for 15 years while we were delivering papers. She had found a study that said one smile can, the effect of one smile can last a year. So meaning, if I smile at you and you smile at someone else and researchers somehow track that smile can go a year. So she asked me to write a story about, three people who, might kind of fit that profile. And one of my children, for one of those, I brought it up to my kids and one of them said, well, what about Ed? So I wrote him into that story first. He was thrilled to find himself in the paper. Yes. And I was just writing my first novel at the time. And, I don't want to say my confidence wasn't there, but some of it was time. Some of it was confidence. It was a daunting project. And I remember he was so happy when he saw the paper. He says, I know a real writer. I think it kind of clicked that that's what I did. And I remember saying, where? Because my freelance writing was what paid the mortgage. This was just really one big family operation. And fast forward, I missed his Calkins Day event. And that's a bigger story than this podcast. But he had been trying to get me to write a newsletter for his little kingdom, of which he was the ruthless dictator of that. And I didn't need another project. But I felt bad that I had missed his event because he would do a lot of kind of side things on the route for us. He would, if a certain publication came in late and I had to get going, he'd run it out for me. So things like that. So I offered him a spot in the novel as an Irish vampire, or I would do the newsletter. And he loved the idea of being written in the novel. We did it legally and he didn't care what I did with the character. To me, I thought that was because of his confidence. Until I did a Q&A with him close to publication, for the blog, I had no idea that he did not have, some of these things about him is when he started sharing them. A key part of his character, it was interesting where he said that he doesn't want people to think, or Nancy had said that, he doesn't, want people to think badly of him, that concerns him, is his character actually. His ruthlessness is the fact, not that he does any physical harm, but that he writes a limerick to put you in your place, to let you know he thinks badly of you. And, that's his ruthlessness with his ruthless dictator persona. And we made it into the vampire. So that's okay. Where that went.
So for the audience, I keep hearing that you are creating an imaginary world in your mind, Ed. So at night times, you're delivering these papers and organize this every night during your night shift. And while you're doing that, your brain is whirring and you're creating some imaginary worlds. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yes, certainly. I mean, one of the things that might be obvious to you already is that I was afraid of people thinking bad of me. So I imagined thinking instead that they were afraid I would think badly of them. You know? And it occurred to me that even some ruthless dictators that are not afraid to die, you know, to maintain power, and they're very afraid of being thought of, you know, in a comical light, you know. And I was playing around with that. One time I quipped that I didn't want to do this anymore, that I wanted to be a ruthless dictator, you know, that, and I, that's,
and it's stuck.
I started commiserating with other supervisors about countries we could take over by insulting them, I think at one point we wrote a form letter, you know, dear failed state, we're taking over, send us a map to your country along with the capital, the bars and the brothels, but don't tell my wife.
So you started this kind of imaginary story amongst your teammates as well. It wasn't just within your own mind.
Yes. And, I think Denise overheard it. By the way, I do remember it a little bit different. I remember that I was really delighted with the article, but, playing this character, I was complaining to her that I wasn't getting enough press coverage, you know, and, in my fantasy view, you know, she wrote me into the novel to placate me so that I wouldn't be, you know,
ruthless to her.
Ruthless to her, out of fear, you know, she was afraid. And of course, when I'm in this character, I will insist that the entire trilogy that she wrote is really all about me, you know, even though I only have minor roles. And she has a website that she reserved a corner, but just for me. And I would post to it different silly little pieces, maintaining that character, if you will. And it's from that, from those posts, I think the character grew. But then when I was tasked with writing the backstory of this Ed Calkins character that in the trilogy, I think my actual person started grabbing the pen, you know, maybe the little boy in me that wanted, his own personal pain to be recognized, and the character in the book, as well as the person that I am, would insist that I'm probably one of the luckiest people in the world, you know. And in a strange way, that includes dyslexia. You know, I think my lack of confidence, you know, meant that I was still single when I met this woman right here, you know. And in the novel, there's some speculation that I wrote her into the novel as well as Denise, by the way. And that there's some speculation that she must have stolen my soul.
I did.
You know, but in the novel, dyslexia is, I use my own dyslexia for comic relief, but also there are two very important plot twists that I don't really want to give away, you know, where it kind of shows the double sword that dyslexia is, you know. I think for me, it's having to overcome it, you know, made my memory better, I think, you know. I think I'm, a lot of times I was given a route to do with a route list that wasn't in order, you know, or for various reasons. And where that was an undaunting task for most downroute drivers, that usually didn't bother me. You know, I'm used to all routeless are in are out of order for, you know, for me, you know, so it, so I found that sneaking into the book.
This podcast is sponsored by DyslexiaProductivityCoaching.com, which helps you organize yourself creatively with a productivity system for Apple devices. So for the listeners,
yes,
as a summary, you basically, let me summarize this quickly.
Okay, yeah, please.
So Ed, you've got this imaginative fantasy world, this persona, yes, you've created that, yes, you're starting to share with the other teammates in the middle of the night, and it involves being a dictator, and Denise gets
ruthless dictator.
Okay. Yeah, and it's comedic, yeah, and it lightens up and it makes the whole work funner, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Denise gets, yeah, drawn into this as well. And because she's an author, she says, that's a fantastic character. Can I weave it into my novel? And she does. And then readers of her novel start to say, her trilogy, start to say, hey, this Ed Cat,
Ed Calkins. It's his name. Yeah.
It's actually your name. I keep muddling them up. I think they're actually separate names, but
Ed Calkins, but he has a title, The Steward of Terra. It's Ed Calkins, The Steward of Terra.
Steward of Terra. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there's Ed Calkins, you, the real person, and then there's Ed Calkins, The Steward of Terra. Okay. People are reading about Ed Calkins, The Steward of Terra, in Denise's trilogy. And then some of the readers are saying, we want to hear about the backstory of this interesting character, at which point Denise tells you, and you decide to actually write the novel of Ed Calkins, The Steward of Terror.
Oh, I got really excited.
You know, and then terrified.
But I've heard that if you're trying to get published, you know, you write a summary of what you're thinking about and maybe two chapters. You don't want to throw full manuscript at a potential publisher, you know. So I did that. I sat down and I wrote two chapters right away, trying to get the ball rolling, you know. And I was expecting instruction. And instead, Denise basically said, no, write whatever you want to write. And I was thinking, boy, this is great. You know, a book about Ed Calkins, you know, for Ed Calkins and by Ed Calkins. You know, this doesn't get any better. You know,
and one of the things I was surprised at is Ed put a time limit when he had to finish the book. And he actually stuck to it. That shocked me because he's so critical of what he does. I did not expect him to really finish.
Before this, over 20 years, I had written a trilogy, mm-hmm, and didn't back it up. You know, the hard drive crashed and lost the whole thing. And I had no grief about it because I didn't think it was very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think I would have thought this was very good either, except I was getting a lot of encouragement.
From who?
One thing I discover is I like my writing a lot better when somebody else reads it to me. And I think that's related to my dyslexia. I really do. You know, I get the words out of it. I get what the words mean eventually. But I've got a roundabout way of coming out with what is being said.
So can you tell us?
That's true. Even if I did the writing.
Can you tell us a little bit about, listeners, Ed's story happens. Ed's story is basically 7 seconds long.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So Ed, explain a quick, you know, 2-minute overview like you shared with me before we started.
Okay. Yeah.
So listeners can get a big picture of what your novel's about.
Okay, there are two layers to the story. The first layer, the easiest layer to follow, is that I'm murdered on the route, and there's this there's this auxiliary police officer, who is pretty sure she knows who did it because she remembers pulling the trigger. What she doesn't remember is why. And also, she has a certain gripe with him, and he's a vampire now. And they're going to meet in a duel, you know, where two people fight, you know, towards the end of the novel. The other layer is what happens in that 7 seconds where I'm bleeding to death. Now, in Denise's book, she has me being charged by one of her characters with creating a changeling son. But as it turns out, it's not going to be created the way Denise envisioned this changeling son. It involves a lot of time travel. And it also involves a lot of going into my own imagination and finding the characters there very, very unruly and uncooperative. And that's the basic summary.
Fantastic. And yes. Dyslexia is actually in the story as well, not just in the backstory, but is actually, do you talk about dyslexia in the story?
I do. You know, I don't explain it, but I try and illustrate it by the different mistakes that I make in the story. You know, one of the things, mirrors are very prominent in this. And I think a mirror is kind of, you know, a dyslexic, reflection, mm-hmm. reflection, you know, in that left is right and right is left, you know, when you're actually looking through one, you know.
But yeah, so a mirror is like a metaphor for some of the dyslexic challenges, you know, this flipping, redirecting, reorientating. You're not sure whether you're looking in the mirror or in real life. And is that what you're saying?
Yes, that. And it winds up being a portal to another world entirely.
And so in a way, dyslexia can often be a portal into another world entirely too, because it unlocks a lot of your imagination and so forth, rather than locks you down into the routine and the predictable.
Correct.
Yes. You know, I agree, you know.
Fascinating. Yeah. The whole concept of the mirror. And it's interesting with Leonardo da Vinci, he did a lot of mirrored writing as well, a very famous dyslexic. He would naturally write in mirrored writing, and some people thought he was writing in a mirror to code it, but they can see now he was just naturally writing in mirror, and he could flip it both ways.
Right.
I was surprised when I found out some people could not make out what writing in a mirror said. That never occurred to me. I was always able to read backwards writing. I thought everyone could.
Yes. And isn't that fascinating that often from within a dyslexic mind, everyone thinks everyone else thinks like them. But everyone else thinks just a little bit differently, and people with dyslexia often have much more specialized brains and think very differently in certain areas. So in those 7 seconds, this character goes backwards and forwards in time travel, and all sorts of things happen.
And, yes.
And you also reference Denise's book. Denise, could you jump in here and talk about how your two books relate to one another?
Well, you know, I'll use the mirror as the jumping point, I guess, but then like Ed, just go back a little bit. So we wrote him in as this Irish vampire, steward of terror, ruthless dictator person in the first book. And he's a minor character, and we grow that character into the second book, but it takes elements of all of him, including the news agency part. And my book does involve vampires, and my lead vampire, because he's having some changing issues for, I guess, the most thing. He's trying not to live as a vampire, gets a night job. But once we put Ed in the book, we had him working for a news agency. And that led to his getting murdered on the route. But because of this character we created, it totally changed the concept of the third book in the trilogy. And when he says he's a minor character, by the time we get to the third book, Ed is a main character. And in that book, he had given that the changeling child a mirror. And sometimes when the change, he looks in the mirror and he doesn't know he's a changeling. He sees himself, but sometimes he does not. And we use that concept of the mirror as a portal or not. And Ed took that and expanded it into all these different ways. He used some of the same characters. And a couple of times he rewrote a scene a little differently because it's all from his perspective, which can be, because we've always stressed he lives in his imagination, it kind of makes him a little bit of an unreliable narrator, but that gives him great freedom to do what he wants to because it's all his perspective. And when he says he shows the dyslexia, so he took the concept then of mirrors and portals and the time travel, but he used that dyslexic as almost a plot device without saying it's dyslexia. And it was very clever. Yeah. As I'm reading through that and realized what it was he had done as I'm getting near the end, I was really impressed. And he's a very good writer. You know, what his only trouble, I guess, was confidence, which I didn't realize in the beginning, and the fact that it affects the spelling. And I did realize that in the beginning because I had asked him to blog for me and he didn't want to do it because he was such a poor speller. Or as he said, spell check doesn't recognize me. That and a lot of the things Ed would say actually made it into the novel. He'd say something wonderful like his ruthless dictator, you know, has this verbal harem. He's always asking people to marry him, but I mean, that's just getting his degree. And that's how you become a wife. I turned him down, by the way. And I remember, you know, handing out Ralph books one day and he said, well, you know, he went out to dinner last night, you know, with my wife, I think, and her sister. And he said, I married the waitress last night. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I wrote that down and it actually shows up, you know, where he appears someplace and mentions he's there. So all those things had made it into the book. And then he took some of those characters, some of the story jumping, and it's his own version and beyond in the book. And it's very good. And one thing that did happen with him as he wrote the book is his spelling improved. It wasn't, you know, where I was sometimes trying to decipher every sentence in those early blogs. It was, I mean, certainly he needed help with spelling and you know, it but that was okay. That was my job. That was my job to kind of read through it and help him with those things. His job was simply to write it and to approve anything that I changed, which wasn't very much. Mostly spelling.
Fantastic.
Okay, I've got a new fear. Something just stabbed me in the heart. You know, I'm wondering if by reading all those misspelled words and I've somehow like hypnotized you to become dyslexic. maybe the book is totally unreadable.
And you don't notice the misspelled words.
Yeah. Wow, that is an interesting plot device. You know, what if reading from a dyslexic piece, you know, made the readers all dyslexic eventually?
Yeah, we make the whole world dyslexic.
I'll let somebody else pursue that.
Well, I think there are many parents and educators listen to this podcast. And I think just for a moment, it might be useful to reflect back on this and see, as an outsider myself, you know, a lot of people find it surprising that people with dyslexia actually become excellent writers. And you know, because the impression is people with dyslexia aren't good with words. Whereas actually what happens is that people with dyslexia aren't often good with low grade clerical work, but they're very good at high level strategic thought. They're very good at plot, characterization, the whole scene setting and dynamics and extrapolating dynamic thinking of what realistically would happen, wouldn't happen. This is what they would say. This is what they wouldn't say and so on. And because we're constantly living in this dynamic environment, the dyslexic advantage where Dr. Brock and Fernadette Ide describe the four mind strengths. They call it the mind strengths because it's all about reasoning, material reasoning for M, I, which is, oh, I'm not going to remember them all. M-I-N-D. M is material reasoning. N is narrative reasoning. D is dynamic reasoning. And I'm not quite sure what I is. But basically, these are all a form of reasoning. It's kind of like creative logic, you know? Uh-huh. And when you have this robust creativity and logic combined, then you often can really create great narratives because we're thinking in narrative structures, we're thinking in dynamics, we're extrapolating time and so on and backwards and forwards. We can be great as in terms of archaeology, you know, because we can envision why things have worked backwards. We can be good in terms of science and theories. Einstein was dyslexic, Steve Jobs was dyslexic, etc. So it can be surprising that someone with dyslexia can be good at writing, but a lot of great writers have dyslexia. They just need to have a really good editor with them like Denise
to make sure
that the structure and the formatting and the spelling and also a sense check is there in terms of communicating the bigger heart of and thrust of the story as well. You know, Churchill was dyslexic. Yeah. He did everything by dictation to a person beside him who he talked and they typed it out and so forth. So it's just fascinating to hear that dynamic in practice here with you.
You know, I would love to know some dyslexic poets. Very often in my dyslexia, I'm aware of phrases that mean the same thing or mean something totally different when you mix up the words, and trying to make a complete thought out of what you just said. This seems to me like it'd be a good starting point for poetry. Do you know of any dyslexic poets?
Well,
Yeats was said to have been dyslexic.
Yeats. You mean Yeats, right?
I do mean that.
William Butler Yeats?
Yes.
Okay, he's one of my favorites.
You know,
he was a crazy Irish guy, just like me. he was a little better at it though. He was also a statesman, you know.
That is crazy.
Yeah, also he held public office. I didn't know that. I didn't know that he was also dyslexic.
Well, I think, Ed, a little bit of digging, you'll probably find there's something about poetry and dyslexia. Yes. I mean, one of my students, for example, that comes to Bullet Map Academy, she's in Ireland. Shout out, she's actually been one of the guests, Evie, who's 13. She won a writing competition in Ireland. And one of the ways she likes to write is she maps it all out with a mind map using the bullet map system that we taught her. She maps it all out and then she turns it all into poetry. So she tells the story in poetry. She actually published her book on Amazon, a children's poetry story, but it's in rhyme. And there's something...
Oh, wow.
There's something about...
I would like to read that. I would really like to read that.
Well, I'll put it into the... She's got a Kindle version and a hard copy version. I'll put it into the show notes. In fact, if you're listening, I'll put Ed's book into the show notes, which is called what, by the way?
Ruthless.
Your book's called Ruthless?
Denise's, it had to be called Ruthless.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Denise will put your trilogy in and Evie will put your book in and we'll put in a link to Yeats as well.
For sake of completeness. Yeah, that would be great.
And so, you know, there is something about poetry where there's a contract in terms of poetry where you're basically making sure that the other person engages their mind in grappling with understanding what you're saying.
Yeah.
Rather than explicitly saying it. So there's a fluidity and dynamicness within a poetry that suits dyslexia very well, because we're often very thoughtful thinkers. What we're saying is not just what we're describing, it's inferring what is deeper or bigger or a core principle. We're maybe elaborating, expounding, or pointing towards something rather than explicitly, systematically chopping it down, which narration.
By the way, in the book, there is a poet, you know, in Ruthless, there is a poet that is taken from a person that, kind of built from a collection of people that I knew, you know, but because I had no permission, I had to use what I could write, you know.
I see. You know? Ed, let's bring this all to one finish here and close
great.
This up with one big question. We started off this with dyslexia being something that knocked your confidence. And it basically knocked your confidence off the table for a good part of 40 odd years, by the sounds of it. And even now it's, you know, affected your confidence. But I've got one question is, where is your confidence now that you've written this novel?
Well,
he smiles a lot now.
I smile a lot. I've got a published novel, Dance, you know. writing this book has done a lot for my confidence. Mm-hmm. I've forgiven so many things about myself. I've forgiven myself for so many things, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not illegal, but it should be. In this novel, I write about my own funeral, you know, that should be illegal. I when you picture people grieving, you know, your head gets really big. My head got really big anyway. You know, it's I'm going to have to manage my overconfidence right now, you know, with this bringing this novel to fruition has been a big really big joy. It's a lifelong dream, actually, and being interviewed about it isn't helping my humility at all.
Well, you've got some catching up to do, Ed.
He actually wrote it in the book. Could I just read you a couple lines?
Please answer
that question. So the book has 25 chapters and an epilogue and a prologue, and he goes back and forth between the characters and sometimes monologuing, and he gives a little farewell at the end of chapter 21 for his final monologue, and then it sticks with the characters. And then he said, so one theme in the book is about winning the lottery, which is a bit of a euphemism. So he says, the day I won the lottery, I behaved badly. Maybe you should skip the next few chapters and just read the ending. If you did that, you'd think better of me. Whether or not you do, I must thank you. I know I was a jerk when you first started reading, but I didn't really believe I could write anything worth reading. But you kept on reading, and I started believing. It's believing in you that helped me believe in me. Isn't it strange that a novel that asks both writer and reader to believe in wood sprites, leprechauns, and brownies, and all sorts of other myths, should find the hardest belief of all is ourselves. I find myself at the end of a story I never thought I would tell. I find myself finishing a story that is actually worth reading. Thank you for believing in me when I could not believe in you. Now, with your skills as a reader, a world of brownies, rainbows, clovers, lovers, and leprechauns are just one good dream away, and maybe, if you so grant it, one good laugh. Fare thee well, reader. May you live as long as you want and never want as long as you live.
Fantastic. What a great way to end the podcast. Listeners, you know, we'll put the link in the description below, but I think this is another one to read, guys. Ed, final words over to you. Ed, Nancy, Denise, it's been fantastic to have you on the podcast. So entertaining. Ed, any final thoughts and words?
Well, thank you again. You know, it's been my dream to be interviewed about anything at all, but being interviewed about a book I wrote is really, really giving me a big boost in confidence, yes. I would say. You know, so I can't thank you so much. And Denise, thank you.
Absolutely.
It was indeed.
Mm-hmm. It was a pleasure to have all three of you on the podcast and to hear your story and how dyslexic it is to have one character that jumps across into different novels and helps people in the real world doing their night runs, keeping them fun, helps someone else write their novel and write into that character and then becomes a novel of its own. And, you know, all that joined up thinking and so forth. Ed, it's been a real pleasure to meet you. And Nancy, Denise, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again. Yes. She'll try and keep me grounded.
Definitely.
And if you're a parent listening to this, you know, we really do need to guard our children's confidence with a ruthless determination. Because if we don't guard our children's confidence when they're young, it can have very significant consequences for life. And Ed's felt some of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what do you do about that as a parent? And I think probably the key, there's so much to it. You know, we talk about this a lot in the podcast. But I think it comes down to helping the child find what they're good at.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to also help the child find what they're good at, and the ideal is to use that to compensate for what they're bad at.
Yeah.
Rather than, I'm really good at swimming or I'm really good at that, but they're not necessarily going to become a professional this or that. But there, we have incredible abilities already within us. If we can discover them as children, Ed's memory, for example, and find ways to use that to compensate for some of the downsides of dyslexia, then you can actually surf this wave and not lose so much confidence. But I'll just leave that seed thought with you guys as listeners. This episode's all been about confidence. Ed, Nancy, Denise, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And very nice meeting you.
And you. All the show notes, all the links in the description below.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com. It's my day job when I'm not hosting this podcast. Tell me, do you know what you want to achieve in the workplace, but you're struggling with how to achieve it? Maybe you suspect some traits of dyslexia are getting in the way. Well, that's where Dyslexia Productivity Coaching comes in, because we give you a simple productivity system for your Apple devices that harnesses the creativity that comes with your dyslexia. It includes proven methods like note-taking, reminders, speech-to-text, mind mapping, and more, all tailored to your needs. It'll free up your time and help you achieve outstanding results. Book a complimentary call to discuss it with me, and if you do it soon, I may also be available to coach you personally via Zoom. So don't be shy, go to dyslexiaproductivitycoaching.com or swipe up and book it now.